Andale Banks, your host. Wish Upon a Star is a dynamic radio program spotlighting talent in the arts arena with discussions and challenges and even experienced advice in making it in the visual, musical, literary, painting, and performing arts. As a unique part of the show, we will interview professional guests, experts in the fields of entertainment law, copywriting, studio recording, publishing, and promoters, all relative to these highly competitive industries. Today, ladies and gentlemen, our discussion will delve into the art of fashion. After the war, the Paris Fashion House was reopened, and once again, Paris resumed its position as the arbiter of high fashion. The beginnings of Eastern fashion came on the scene to create an identity distinct from European fashion. And during this period, we saw the upstart of models, many obtaining supermodel status, the likes of Tyra Banks, Heidi Klum, and Naomi Campbell, with Beverly Johnson being the first African-American model to appear on the cover of Vogue in 1974. Introduced were other African-American models, such as Grace Jones, Danielle Luna, Myra Bird, Naomi Sims, and Tuki Smith, who were some of the top black fashion models who paved the way for black women in fashion and others who wished to enter the art of runway modeling fashion shows. Today, our honored guest is Mr. Travis Winky. His bio. Travis Winky is a legend, an icon in the international runway modeling fashion show industry. Travis Winky is the founder and president of the Travis Winky Model Studio, which is a full-service fashion production company. He has directed some of the most prestigious fashion events in the world. Travis has taken his fashion shows to Africa, Paris, Rome, and South America, whereupon the Washington Post in 1990 and 1991 called Travis Winky Fashion Show the largest, glittiest fashion production they had seen. And then Muhammad Ali dubbed Travis Winky the Prince of Fashion. Travis has promoted a vast percentage of African-American designers and models in this country for more than 35 years. He says, "I know that God has given me this gift to not only share with the world, but bring quality to the lives of so many young people which he has touched." Travis, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, and I'm loving it. It's a person. It makes you sound really, really exclusive. How you doing, Adele?
Oh, just fine, dear. And I, like I said, it is an honor. And I told everybody. They said, oh, and everybody knew you when I told them.
Oh, thank
Travis
so
on the show. And everybody knew it. I said, well, that's wonderful. Since everybody knows you, I'm going to ask you some questions. But like I told you before, these are ridiculous questions. But anytime you want to break in and say what you want to say, you have my permission.
Sounds good.
Okay, so we're going to start from the beginning, because most things, when you have a wonderful life and a career, usually starts at the beginning. What is your beginning? Mm-hmm. That should include the family, and what influenced your career choices?
Well, I guess my beginning is my family. You know, I'm from a family of 15. I got
Woo!
Seven brothers and seven sisters. Yep. And born and raised here in Baltimore City. My father was the kind of guy, he was a carpenter, and he was the kind of man that only wanted the best for his children. And for the men in the family, or the boys in the family, he always wanted us to have our own business of some kind, so that that would make us more secure in our lives, the way he saw it, and that we should always be in control. And being in control of our lives, to him, meant you can't be drinking, you can't be smoking, you can't do anything that would alter the way that you think and the way that you do things. So I'm a guy who never drank, never smoked, never had any kind of habits that would take me away from trying my best to do the right thing. And we were raised in the church. And that's basically, that's my real, real beginning. My first fashion show was when I was 10 years old in my backyard. I used to do shows in my backyard all the time, and I would get all the kids in the neighborhood, you know, to come, and I would show them these little steps I wanted them to do, and I would tear sleeves off of shirts and take belts and tie them places. It was crazy, but we thought it was wonderful. And we used to have these little shows in the backyard. A friend of mine, Alvin Parsons, who passed away sometime now, would walk around with his hat, like the little rascals, getting money from everybody. People sitting on top of trash cans and on scaffolds and on staircases and on porches and in yards in the alley, you know, to see this little fashion show we did. And we did them, a series of them, but we just kids. But this was our way of showing off what we thought we could do and to make a little money. You know, maybe it was those 5 and 10 cents that they added up. So that was my real beginning. And then, well, out of high school, that's where I really began to blossom with the things that I love, which is fashion. And seeing people on television like the Rat Pack at that time, these guys and other guys you saw on television that were always dressed immaculately, suits and ties and that old school kind of dressing with the women. And that took a great effect on me. I always wanted to dress good, and I always do it. And not being from family, I never had a lot of clothes. Everything I had was a hand-me-down. So that really made me want to be able to dress well. So that's where the designing and that kind of thing fell in there. And that's kind of like my beginning.
Oh, that sounds great. With 15 people in the family, you did a remarkable, you have a remarkable life, and I am so glad. We're going to later talk about that in your biography later in the show. Again, okay. You mentioned high school and how that sort of touched your career choices. So great success is sometimes steered by those in education as well. Who helped guide you down that right path?
Well, you know, I never was really like the perfect student. I was okay in school, but my mom was really into dancing, the arts, dancing and fashion and that kind of thing. So in school, I got in all the programs in school where I could get on stage, you know, dancing and whatever. So, you know, performing. And I was really, really into that. And, you know, it's my dance instructor at the time at Douglas High School. She really guided me because she got me involved with Peabody Institute downtown in Baltimore. The Peabody Institute, and got me a scholarship there, helped to get me a scholarship there. And I studied the Peabody Institute, and I studied the grand theory of dance and modern. And then from there, you know, I was always a good dancer. I used to, even when I was a kid, 10, 11, 12, 13 years old, I was a good dancer, but a street dancer. And when I got in high school, it was still the street dancing and hand dancing and that kind of thing. I was always good at that. But then my instructor, her name is Ernestine Everett, she guided me and wanted me to study at Peabody. And then I went to a school called Danny Diamond here in Baltimore. And then the Baltimore School of the Ballet, places like that, which studying at a ballet company, but I was really studying ballet to help enhance my modern dancing and the grand theory and things that I did. So that really carried me a long way. Believe it or not, I'll tell you a story. Can I tell you a story?
No, absolutely.
Just a little story. Okay. Rudolph Nureyev, years ago, and this is in like the early 70s. Rudolph Nureyev was one of the greatest ballet dancers in the world, Russian ballet. And
I knew him very well. Yeah,
They performed at the Lyric Theater here in Baltimore, and my instructors at Peabody, they would always get extras in the towns they went to. Like when they came here to the United States, my instructors at Peabody chose two or three of the kids to be in. Well, kids, we were like teenagers. Were to be in the production. And I was one of those kids who was in the production with Rudolph Nureyev. Oh. And everybody was like scared to talk with this man. He would not talk to people. He seemed very arrogant and that kind of thing. But for some odd reason, he took to me and we talked and he didn't talk really great English. We even got him to take him out to Drew Hill Park one day, which he would never go out and never really talk to the people, even in his production, you know, the traveled him around the world. And that was a great experience in my life, just being on the stage. And the little things we did wasn't hard. It was no hard dance or anything, but it was a part of the production. And being on stage and to be able to do a bit of what we call performing, not the big ballet and all, but it, just being on the stage before Rudolph Nureyev was the greatest ballet dancer in the world. It was a real treat. And from there, you know, I was a go-go dancer, you know, and I had about four or five girls that danced, and it was two of us guys who were go-go dancers. From being on stage with Rudolph Nureyev even made me better at that. You know what I'm saying? Because the confidence that it gives you and those kind of things. So I had a great young life, you know, doing things and getting into projects that really enhanced my ability to believe in myself even more and to do more and to create that kind of thing, you know. So,
right, and that experience, that's why you're doing what you're doing now with the young people, because you know how valuable that is. I took tap and ballet, and of course, ballet was by Rudolph, oh my God, that was thrown at us, and we saw everything about, and Balanchine. I'm talking about, you know, those great, great choreographers of ballet, and he was one of my favorites, too, and then came Baryshnikov after that.
Right, he came
after. Like you're saying, you got to have that motivation. When you meet those kind of people, it just makes your heart go like, wow.
Yeah. You know what, even after that, I had so much confidence. I was always doing my little choreography. I don't know if you remember this group years ago. It was the Moments. Remember the group called the Moments?
Oh, yeah.
Of Englewood, New Jersey. Well, in Baltimore.
But Gooding, isn't that Gooding's father?
Yes.
No.
And the Moments?
Yeah.
They were a singing group.
Yeah, but that's the actor. That was his father. He was in the moment.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe, yeah. Well, anyway, I used to be their choreographer.
Okay.
I was doing choreography here in Baltimore with the Soft Tones here in Baltimore and the Whatnots and about four or five groups around in Baltimore. I did their choreography for, like, their singing groups.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Whatnots introduced me to the Moments because they did a tour together. And the Moments brought me to Englewood, New Jersey with Joe and Sylvia Robinson, who owned All Platinum Record Company, and hired me to be the choreographer for the Moments. I was the choreographer for them for about 5 years. Oh, and I toured all over the country with the Moments, with Ray Goodman and Brown. And, I mean, that was a great experience. And that was in my very, very early, late teens, early 20s. And, I mean, we went everywhere with them. And it was being with, touring around the country with the Moments was the first time I really, really toured around and doing choreography for them. In the evenings, I would just go out and walk the streets of different towns, like when we were in Boston, Massachusetts. And I would go out in the evenings when I didn't have to work, if we were on a tour or something. I would walk around, and one day I walked by a school, and it was like a modeling school, and I just stopped, and I stopped at the door and looked at what the guys and the women were teaching them with modeling and stuff. And that's when I really thought that I could do that, because I said, hey, you know, look what they're doing. I can do that. You know what I mean? So that was the beginning of me really believing and knowing that I could have my own modeling school, because in Baltimore, I had a little troop of guys and girls would go around and we would do fashion shows. But that really gave me the inspiration of really doing a full-fledged modeling business. So.
Well, you just answered my next question, because my next question was, an unconditional commitment can be a terrifying thing. So was that when you decided to make high fashion your career and then just stuck with it?
And you know, thing, it I kind of wanted some kind of career, because from my childhood, I knew I was going to have some kind of business,
right?
And just you know, just modeling and stuff like that, around the city doing little small things. When I first started the modeling thing, there was a lot of people say, "Oh, Travis Winkie, you're a nice guy, you're a good little dancer, but you're too short to be a model." Because most of the models are tall, 5'6", 6'2". You know what I mean? But I'm one of those kind of people, at that point, nobody can tell me what I can or cannot do.
Right,
so that just wanted me to go harder at what I wanted to do in life. And then I came across Connie Ross in Columbia, Maryland. I don't know, years ago she had a modeling studio in Columbia. And she did pageants. Her name is Pony Ross. And she's the one who really gave me the opportunity to be a model with her group, and also let me help to teach the people that came to her studio for pageants. Before her, there were a lot of people in Baltimore who were doing big fashion shows and all kinds of things. But Pony was the one who gave me the chance to really explore and flourish, helped me to flourish what I was doing as far as fashion was concerned. And that was my real, real start. And starting a business.
Oh.
Yeah. And it took a while after that, because to start to actually start my business, I've been thinking about it like starting in 73, I was working at things a lot. But it really got booming in 75, in 1975. And we began to do fashion shows all over the city, and I was nursing and rehearsing the Travis Winkie theory and concept of modeling. And you know, when you see people on stage right now, you see them and they say pose, 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 pose. Have you ever seen that around town? Well, that began right here in Baltimore at my studio, 2515 Living Heights Avenue, where I developed that technique as a part of the Travis Winkie theory and concept of modeling. And I taught models or taught people to do 250 poses in a matter of a minute. And constantly moving. And on stage, it was like a part of our fashion show on stage. But it really helped them a lot with print modeling. So I taught the theory and the concept of modeling for a long time. And while I was teaching it, I was still developing it, you know, so it was still all new, you know, and that brought me a long ways with that part of my life with starting into the real fashion world.
Oh, that's great. And I can identify with that. I was a model for a while in the 70s with the Green Modeling Agency, and I was their head model, but I didn't do a lot of runway. I did some runway, but most of mine was photographer.
Uh-huh.
And I was on Baltimore Magazine, on the back cover of Baltimore Magazine. And I know exactly what you're saying. You know, I was kind of short for a model, too, but they, but I had some of the other things that they were looking for.
Yeah,
I'm
going to
do
yeah.
one more question, then we're going to take a break. But with Travis, as we stated in your bio, your fashion shows are legendary. What were some of the most prestigious fashion events in your illustrious career?
My illustrious career.
You know what? Yes, darling.
I'll tell you about some of our big shows I do. But, you know, people now, they say, Travis Winkie, the icon. I never saw myself as that really big in the fashion world. I always, I just did what I do. Love what I'm doing.
No, don't say that because of the fact that there weren't any others out there doing it. That makes you the icon.
Right.
That makes you the legendary. I had another legend on my show, Bebe Williams.
Yes.
He has an actual legend status. He was considered a legend. You know, so you are. Because there weren't anybody else out there doing it.
You're right. Yeah. Well, his Bebe's sister was one of my first models. And my first troupe. And she did the first cover. She did the first cover. I'll talk to you later on about this. You can ask about later on the magazine that we did.
Yeah, your Travis magazine, right.
Yeah, but let me tell you about, you asked me about some of the shows.
Yeah.
One of the greatest shows that I've done in my life was the Congressional Black Caucus show in 90 and 91. I did it twice. Because that was for all the congressmen and the politicians in our country.
Right.
And I did two of the biggest and the most successful fashion shows that they ever did. I did those two shows at the Hilton Hotel, the Congressional Black Caucus Spouses Fashion Show. And we had to squeeze in the building over 3,000 people to the shows, two shows that I did. So that was one of the greatest achievements of my life. It was that to me. I've done shows overseas with called Miss Model International, which started at 35 countries around the world, and it went up to like 75 countries all over the world.
Oh, wow.
And I did that for about 10 years, off and on, about 10 to 12 years. And from that, I started meeting other people. I met a man by the name of Green, and he lived in Bermuda. And this man really showed me the way of working worldwide. Because Mr. Green introduced me to people in different countries.
Oh.
From him, I went and worked in about at least 7 different countries. He also did pageants for girls. And I ended up doing 2 or 3 of his pageants, teaching the girls for stage and how to walk and their presence and that extra little flair and stuff that I have a great knack of teaching. And so I did those. I did the in-person shows, shows that drew like 2,000 and 3,000 people at a time. I've done shows down in South America. I've done them in Paris and Rome and Africa. I work with Patrick Kelly, who was the first black designer that made Chambre Saint-Nicolas in Paris. And Patrick Kelly is from the United States. And they had no other black designers doing what he did. And he joined the elite of Paris, of France, of the designers like the Bill Blassers and the Yves Saint Laurent and the Giorgio Di Sant'Angelo's, all those people. He was a part of that crowd of people. And Patrick and I were very good friends, he and I and Willie Smith of Willie Ware. And they also introduced me to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
But that was some of the big shows I've done. I've done some very large shows in New York, and I've done them out in California. I mean, you know, I traveled with the Black Expo at that time for a little while. And did wonderful, huge shows in different parts of the United States. So I've done some pretty good shows in my life.
Oh, yeah, I looked at a lot of your videos. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I did want to continue this, so we're going to take a break, and we're in the break for 1 minute, and I'll be right back.
Okay.
Hi. Let's get loose.
District.
Yeah.
That.
What up, y'all? Just came to your city to say what's up.
What up?
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Show me love.
Hop off the plane to a new show.
What up?
And all the shorties, they be waiting on me. Thugs packing they pistols. But ain't nobody aiming on me. Got a pocket full of fresh dough. So you know I gotta bake it, homie.
Bake it for me.
And I'm thankful. Get whatever you want.
Hi, and welcome back to Wish Upon a Star. This is Andell Banks, your host. I want to say thanks for listening to the broadcast, and we're broadcasting Orange Station, www.bbsradio.com, Station 2. You can listen to our previous broadcast in the archive link on the website. We also welcome comments and suggestions. Send them at our email address, musicradio34@gmail.com. Again, welcome comments and suggestions to musicradio34@gmail.com. And you can also friend us on iTunes and Facebook. We will continue our conversation with the legend and icon in the International Runway Modeling Fashion Show, Mr. Travis Winky. When we left Travis, you were telling us about the prestigious shows, so, and all of the people who directed you, which is always a very good thing when you're doing something like that, when people take you under their, you know, hand and guide you to where you need to go. That's a very important aspect. Mm-hmm. You have had also many followers of your fashion events, numerous supporters, long-time admirers such as myself, and well-known great celebrities. Can you swoon us by naming a few of them?
Yeah. Okay. In Baltimore here, remember when Oprah Winfrey was in Baltimore?
Of course.
Oprah, yeah. She had a television show here in Baltimore. And Oprah used to get most of the black models that went on her show, a lot of them came from my studio.
Oh, wow.
And Oprah is a good, when she was in Baltimore, we were real good, pretty good friends. And Stedman, I knew Stedman before I knew Oprah. Oprah was real good. Kwasi Mfume, who introduced me to the caucus to help me to get the Congressional Black Caucus fashion show when I did it. Mario Van Peebles is a very, very good friend of mine. And Mario Van Peebles, the actor, of course, he's now in Hollywood doing movies and that kind of thing. But before that, we had a magazine. I started a magazine called Travis. And Mario and I did that magazine together for about 10 years. And Mario helped me to design the magazine. At first, the magazine was called Travis Winky. He cut the Winky off and just made it Travis and helped with the designs. And I used to go back and forth to New York. Mario would be down here. When I'm up in New York, Mario and his mother, Mario, his mother, and myself, we would get in their kitchens sometimes to pull things together for my magazine. So, and who else? There's so many people. Muhammad Ali. Ali, every time they would come to town, you know. Muhammad Ali, a lot of times, would hang out and whenever they're around the different parts of the country. There were people like Eddie Kendricks. They would always come to the studio, call me up, say, we're in town, and I would go to wherever they had, if it was a show or whatever, and when it wasn't, they would come over to my studio and watch me train the models. So Eddie and two or three of the other Temptations used to come here a lot. Phyllis Hyman, before she died, was a good friend. I met Phyllis Hyman through Designers in New York, and we got very tight, and whenever she came to Baltimore, she'd call me up. I would have tickets to go to the shows. There were so many people that I met in my life with this fashion world. My favorite actor in the world is Eddie Murphy. And I met Eddie years and years ago, and and introduce him to my magazine. It's just so many. I can't think of all of them now, but I met people you would not believe through the fashion business. And it's really been rewarding. And from a lot of those people, have gotten me a lot of jobs doing shows in different places around the country. So that enhanced my life a lot.
Oh, I can believe it, too, because of the fact when we look at the different shows, the award shows, regardless of whether it's the Emmy, the Grammy, or Tony, the main thing that people look for is what? What are they wearing?
Yeah.
What are they wearing? Yeah. They're wearing the fashion is the thing. You had earlier speaking about the models and how you helped, you know, if not only the models in your shows, but choreography. So in our speaking, what are the different types of models and what are some, let's say, the techniques and instructions you use in choreographing the models for your show?
Okay. Well,
in case some models, potential models are listening.
Okay. First and foremost is my theory and my technique and my concept of modeling, what I came up with. And because most places, schools, and still a place to teach modeling, they just show the girls how to walk up and down. They'll work with the posture a bit, but they don't really have a real theory, technique, and a concept. And that's what I came up with. And what I'm working on now is I do like master classes. And I can teach a person in a weekend what they would learn from a modeling school, going to a modeling school for 6 months to a year. I can teach that in a master class. It's certain things that they can learn if they would just work on those basics things that I work on that I would teach them, and they work on that and study that and get home and do it in their living room and downstairs in their basement and find a mirror in their house to work out the little things that I teach them, it would take them a long way, really a long way. So give me the question again.
So basically we're saying techniques and structures. And like I said, I like to do things where our listening audiences can pick up certain things. So I was asking you about what are they possibly they're looking for when you're talking about different types of models. What are some of the different types of models?
Yeah, different.
Now, everybody might want to do runway, you know?
Right. And different agencies look for different things. You got an agency for runway, and you get agencies for, like, print modeling. So years ago, print modeling is photographic. So it's print modeling.
Go ahead.
Print, right. Years ago, they would have runway models, and that's all the models that did runway. They only did runway and no print. And the print models would do just mostly print and no runway. But now in these days, you have to be able to do both. Print models do runway, and runway do print. And it's really good to, I'm not going to say, a lot of people do this kind of thing. They have a knack for it. What I can do is bring out the best in a person. I work with posture, like posture is one of my pet peeves. You know, to work with a little more class and turning that walk into something special. I can bring those kind of things out of a person. You know, I can bring personality out of them and the way that they carry themselves, the way they move on the runway. You know what I mean? Because it's not just walking down the runway and walking back. You know what I mean? It's a lot more than that, and most people don't realize what it takes. They're not paying girls $10,000, $20,000 to do these big shows and to get a print contract and that kind of thing because they're just pretty.
You
got pretty girls everywhere. It has to be this special something about you. And what I do is I've always had the knack to bring that little special something out in a person, you know, and I'm really, really good at that. So it's not always the choreography and that kind of thing. It's the way that you walk. It's the way that you carry yourself. It's usually your personality in that inner thing for you that's special.
What do
and
you project?
I those things
I
out
you're saying, what does that person project? Right.
Yeah.
It's just like,
yeah.
I guess it's just like being an actor, you know.
Right. Acting without saying a word.
Mm-hmm.
Acting with whether you're really not, because in acting, you know, you have to talk and you have to, you also, but on the runway, you have to show that through your body and what you're doing.
Exactly.
And your presence. You know what I mean? So it's really something, and I've been doing it for years now, and with my theory, the concept and of modeling that we teach, that theory, we are going to pretty soon try to put it out there in the public in a big way, and that'll become soon. And when we do, I'll let you know about it.
Right, so. Travis. I know you have met the Wolves, the Challengers, the Barriers in your 35-plus mm-hmm. years history.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Can you give us some of the things that in this fashion world that you just might run into? Let's say somebody is just venturing into this industry. What are some of the things that you've experienced, which, of course, was 35-plus years ago, which may have changed a little? But give us some of that as a black man, and what some of the things a person possibly would have to look for if they're going to venture into this particular industry today?
Well, first and foremost, with modeling and runway and that kind of thing, you have to learn to accept rejection.
Okay.
Because you're going to get a lot more rejection than you are going to get the positive. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Once you learn that, you turn that into a positive.
Okay.
I can be rejected all day long, but that will never stop the confidence I have inside of me that I'm still the best. Because a lot of people can't accept rejection, and it kills their momentum. And, you know, it makes them feel sometimes when they can't go on. Well, no, you have to learn to accept rejection. That's a very important element when it comes to this field, because you go do auditions all the time. You'll be working with all different kinds of people that work different ways, and you're not going to be wonderful with everybody. I think with me, I think personality has a whole lot to do with the kind of business. You have to have a great personality and be able to talk to people well. If you go into interviews, be able to be assertive without being overreacting. You know what I mean? But you have
yeah.
to be assertive.
Yeah.
And it's just those things of every that you do in everyday life. You have to know how to say yes in a wonderful way, and to say no in even a more wonderful way. You know
yeah.
what I mean? Well,
mm-hmm.
Without intimidating someone, or without looking mean or whatever. So it's really just learning life. It's learning life and how to react. And being the best at what you can do, being confident in yourself, because a lot of us don't have the confidence to go out there in the world and to try to make different kinds of moves. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
I don't know if that's answering your question, but I think accepting rejection, you have to learn that and to be comfortable with that. And to be comfortable with yourself and knowing that what you're doing is the right thing for you. And if it's the right thing for you, you know you're really doing the right thing, it's going to be the right thing for somebody else too.
Right, and that sort of fits in what I did last week. Last week I did a passion, the show on passion.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a passion,
mm-hmm.
how do you know to find out what your passion is and what it takes?
Right.
To fulfill
right.
that dream of your passion. So that falls right.
right
into that, and I'm glad you mentioned that about
yes.
knowing rejection, your personality. That will let you know whether, this, like the mayor said, if you belong.
And yeah, and
it'll let
with
you
that,
know if you belong.
Sure, and then with that, what I believe is that a person can find something that they love doing, their hobby, something that you really love doing. I don't care what that something is. If you have a hobby, you have something that you love doing, you can really turn it into a business. Anytime a person can take rocks and turn a rock into a business, that's what people did years ago.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Find what you love doing and have a passion for, and that you do it well. Nurse that, rehearse that, practice that, preach that, and you can turn that into a business.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
That's what my show was about. You're right.
Yeah, yeah. And that's where I'm at, you know, but I'm passionate in what I do. And I've never worked for anyone else in my life. I've only did this all my life. All my life. I've never had what you call, quote unquote, a 9-to-5.
Right.
I don't have I never had a 9-to-5, but I do a 24-24. You know, I'm working 24
right.
hours a
that's
day.
Right.
But the thing is that I love what I'm doing. And even now, people say, sometimes say, yo, you work too hard. You know, you better cool out. You know, my life has been a vacation.
Yeah, because you're enjoying what you're doing.
That's right.
So it's not a job.
Yeah, exactly. But at the same time, it's my livelihood. So
exactly.
Doing that, I have to treat that as a thing that I do for my livelihood. That is my job. But my job is not from 9 to 5. My job is 24/7. I eat it, I sleep it, I walk it, I teach it. It's 24/7. So that's the thing when you have I guess it'll stop ringing. Hold on. So you have to do it 24/7, and you
right.
really have to really, really be in yourself.
Okay, we got several other things I really want to get to. So the next one before we take another break is, I know you may be a little too young to write your biography, but I understand you have written something similar to a biography of your journey in this fabulous adventure. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, a friend of mine, his name is Norris Y. the Davis, Norris Davis. And Norris Davis, one of the writers for The Wire, he was in The Wire. And Norris and I, years before The Wire now, Norris and I have been friends since we were like kids, young people. And we wrote my biography. And we started out when we were very good friends when we were young, and he got in trouble and got locked up. And I used to go to the prison to see him every week. You know what I mean? And then that's how we came with the idea of doing a biography on me, because he was a real smart guy. He stopped school in the 8th grade, something like that. But as he got older, he was just smart. And we wrote my biography, and it's a 13-chapter biography. And right now we've been doing plays from my biography. I have a play that we're doing now. It's called From the Pulpit to the Runway. But
say that again.
It's from the name of the play is From the Pulpit to the Runway.
I wanted you to repeat so people can understand, you know, when they look out for it.
Yeah. Mhm. And that came from my biography, but we're going to redo my biography all over. Not redo it all over again, but we're going to launch it again. I'm going to update it and launch it again, and. It's really, really, it has wonderful stories in there, things I went through through my journey in life and in the fashion world, which took me to so many places.
Okay,
so,
maybe we can get together and have a book signing.
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
Once you get it done. We're going to take another little break, and we'll be back, and we're going to talk about your newly formed nonprofit organization, M-O-D-E-L. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back in 1 minute.
Baby.
Welcome back. This is Andell Banks, your host of Wish Upon a Star, and we want to say thank you for listening. And you can also listen to us on bbbsradio.com in the archive link. We welcome comments and suggestions at email musicradio34@gmail.com. Please friend us on iTunes and Facebook. We're getting back with our guest, international runway modeling fashion show industry icon, Mr. Travis Winky. Now, Travis, I said, your nonprofit project, M-O-D-E-L, is a very unique endeavor. I like that title because it fits right in with you're doing. Mm-hmm. As executive director, give us the details as to its meaning, the mission, the philosophy, and what you want to accomplish.
Yeah. The model project is a 501c3, and we use the model project to do things for young people.
Uh-huh.
And the word model we use that as the lead word for my foundation, because with the word model, I use that in every sense of that word model. For instance, if you're going to be a carpenter, then you be the best carpenter that you can be. If you're a bricklayer, then you be a model bricklayer. You be the best bricklayer that you can be. If you're a secretary, be a model secretary. So I use that in my everyday way of life. And the 501c3 does after-school programs for young people. Right now, I do a scholarship for my alma mater, my school that I went to, Douglas High School. And we're doing it right now to raise money for scholarships for young people. So we do a multitude of things with the foundation. And it means so much to just be able to have a project, especially a 501c3, that you can go out there and raise money and do something for young people in every aspect of life, not just for modeling, because modeling is just a vehicle to network and to do things for other people and with other people. So our project is really special. It's the Travis Winky Model Project is the name of the foundation. And it's to communicate, resolve, and the deeply rooted and natural feelings of one's individual personality. We try to push young people and uplift young people because they are our future. And that's what we work on 24/7.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. I'm with the children, too. And just to let our audience know that M-O-D-E-L is an acronym for Maximizing Opportunities Via Discipline, Education and leadership.
Yes. Yes.
I thought that was just so unique and profound.
Right.
Again,
right.
Travis, we all start our journey and we have goals. Your dedication to the local and international community is profound.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a dream come true for you, and have you accomplished most of what you set out to do?
I accomplished a lot of things that I wanted to do in life, but there's so much more that I want to do. You know, it's a never-ending thing. And I would like people sometimes just to find out more about me. You can just Google Travis Winky. Just Google me. You can go to my Facebook. I have a Facebook, Travis Winky Studio. You can go to Travis Winky Studio on YouTube, and on Travis Winky Studio on YouTube, they have about maybe 15 or 20 of fashion shows and different things that I'm doing. So there's a lot of ways you can get to me through social media. I've done a lot of things in life, but the most important thing I think that we can do in life is as we do things to help ourselves, do something to help somebody else at the same time. And my
Absolutely.
life goes that way. Yeah, you know, I no matter what I do, I try to do something to keep my life going and keep my lady and pay my bills and that kind of thing. At the same time, I have to do something to uplift and to help someone else. That's very, very important in life, because life is about helping somebody else.
And you know what? You feel better when you do that.
Yeah.
It makes your life feel even better. That's what I did. I could have, after I got my computer degree, I could have went somewhere and worked for a big company and got a whole lot of money, but I said no. Mm. It was at the time when most of our people were coming out of factories, and they didn't have any computer training. And, you know, they've been working in a factory for 15 years and still had another 20 years to work. But where are you going to get a job? So I did that, too. And I understand exactly what you're talking about. What realities of today made you see the need to establish a youth empowerment project?
Well, I mean, just life. I mean, you walk down the streets of Baltimore and you see our brothers and sisters hanging on corners and young kids standing out all night and we don't know how to wear our clothes anymore. We think wearing our pants below our butts, we think that's fashion. We think that's wonderful, but it's really not. So just to enhance what we are and what we do in life, that is, I guess, one of the more important things that I want to do in life. And I don't know, it's just so much. I haven't done probably half of the things I've done been wonderful, but I want to do that much and more starting like now. I always believe that I'm relevant today. You know, having and being in business for like 35 some odd years, a long time they call them old school. I'm not old school. I'm relevant right now. Every 10 years,
exactly.
You have to reinvent yourself.
Yeah.
You know? And you know, I see people now who modeled with me when they were 10 years old, when they were 15 years old. But if they were 10 or 15 years old, they're 30 and 40 and 50 years old now.
Yeah.
In 15 years. So it's important to stay relevant. And it's important to be have energy about what you're doing and love what you're doing. And it never stops. And so I have so much more to do. So much more to do, and that I want to do in life, and that's where I'm at right now. So I'm doing plays now, and of course I will always do fashion shows and helping people with other ventures. I got a venture that we're doing for high school students right now. It's called The Look, and we're working on that. You'll hear more about that as we go along, and you hear about things happening around the state, around the
United
States.
Oh yeah, because this sounds like a two-part program anyway.
Yeah, okay.
And I definitely would have to get you back. So let's get back to fashion and one of my pet peeves. This is one of my pet peeves. Fashion changes and the trend-setting scene seems to go from tailored to classic to mod to punk to gothic and now downright mad. Will we ever get back to dressing sensibly, do you think?
You know, thanks.
And what will
I
make
believe
that happen?
Yeah. I believe that everything goes around in circles. What they did yesterday, they could be doing again today. Like right now, all the clothes are like tight. You know, the boys wear the slim down pants and all that. Well, years ago, we called them the collegians. You know, everybody wore that kind of clothing. So I think with the things that they did years ago, it's going to come right back to us. And we've been doing those things. So but I believe in just being neat and trying to dress as well as I possibly can all the time. Of course, I wear jeans like everybody, because everybody's wearing jeans now. But you can take a pair of jeans
and dress it up.
Dress it up, right. Yeah. You know what I mean? So and I'm a firm believer that I've been with large, big designers who charge big money for clothes, but I can take and spend some really good money on a great suit, and then I can take a lesser amount of money and get another jacket to match with that suit, and then not wear the suit coat, but just wear this other jacket and can look well too. You have to learn how to mix and match things, because dressing really well can be very expensive. But we have to learn to do it, because a lot of folks don't have that kind of money to do it in a modest way. And so, you know, I just try to do the best that I can do in every aspect of my life, from A to Z, and try to be today with that. You know, not yesterday, but be today. And and kind of like feel what the future is going to be. You have to have some kind of feel about what's going to be good tomorrow. And
I think that's another aspect
also
we need to do with the young people, to take what you've got and to make it look more presentable. You know, because some of that stuff they pay a lot of money for. I mean, tennis, $300 or $400 for a pair of tennis, $200 for a jacket, you know.
I see kids paying
hundreds of dollars. You need to have something to show them they don't need to spend that kind of money.
Exactly, exactly. My son is one of them. He wants to, everything he wears, he wants it to be a designer piece. And I've got some of the same things that he, like tennis, that he may pay $100 or $150 for, and I've been overseas to get those same pair of tennis for $25.
Right, right.
You know, so you have to learn those things. You have to be aware of what's happening and the cost of things and how to do things. And that comes with living and life and just learning life and being able to move around and get clothes that look well and fit you well, that look expensive but may not be as expensive. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, Travis, this has been absolutely fantastic. And like I said, I've got a lot of more questions here, but that's okay. What we're going to do is probably somewhere down the line in between the summer months, we'll be doing some. So give us a summary of some of the things we can look forward to.
Okay. Well, first of all, I really enjoyed talking to you. And
absolutely.
I hope your audience enjoyed talking and hearing about some of the kind of things that I'm doing. Right now, I've had about four or five new ventures that we're going to be doing. So from fashion shows to plays to two projects that we're doing for high school kids. That's going to be hopefully be nationwide soon. I'm one of those kind of people. I'm always dreaming up and thinking of new things to do.
Right.
And a lot of times I can think up or dream up a project, and I can see the beginning and I can see the end.
Mm.
And see, a lot of people will think of wonderful things to do or projects they can do, like a show or whatever, and then they have to work at it, because a lot of people will dream something up, but they can't finish it. I can see the ending of everything that I dream up. So that means I got to keep on trying to finish that project.
Well, that's because we have that passion. We have that passion that nothing will stop you.
Yeah. And I believe that everything that if I think of a project I'm going to do, I'm going to finish that project.
Right.
So the same thing when I first did my first play. You know what I mean? I can see it from the beginning to the end. You know, and a couple of new projects that I have come. Oh, let me tell you about one project we're working on right now. We're working on a international project that will be here in the United States. It's going to be a pageant. It's going to be a pageant of girls from all over the world, but all of them live here in the United States.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I've done pageants where close to 100 countries were involved.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to do something now that I can do and be within this country and show the love of this country and what we can do in this country.
And we need that now, too.
Yeah, and I've always been into contests and competitions and pageants and those kind of things. So one of the girls that started out with me, her name is Dawn Moss. And Dawn was Miss Black USA. I forgot what year it was, but we trained her, and she was Miss Black USA. She's a really smart girl. And then we also did the Miss Black USA pageant in the Gambia, West Africa. And so Dawn and I got together, and we're going to do this project with girls from all over the world here in the United States. So that's another project we're getting ready to do. And I'll let you know about that later on. Hopefully your whole audience will know about it pretty soon. But believe me, I'm always thinking about something to do and something to enhance my life as well as some other folks' lives at the same time. So all I can say is Google me. Find me on YouTube, Travis Winky Studios. Look me up. If you need me, call me. My name is Travis Winky.
Okay, great.
Yeah, I guess that's funny.
And like you said, the videography on YouTube is just fantastic, and you can see all the wonderful things he's done that we've talked about today. Thanks so much, Travis.
Well, thank you.
I want to leave the people with your philosophy for our young kids that I think could also reflect for the adults. That is, you say, kids don't care how much you know until they know how much you care.
You got it, girl. You got it.
Thanks so much, Travis. We're going to sign off now. And then
thank you,
I'll talk to you later. Thank you so
much. Thank you
much,
and I thank your audience. Talk to you soon.
Okay. We're going to sign off, ladies and gentlemen, and we will be right back in 1 minute. Hi, this is Andel saying thanks for listening to Wish Upon a Star. Our broadcast is on www.bbsradio.com, station 2. You can listen to this show and all our previous broadcasts in the archive link on the website. We also welcome comments and suggestions at musicradio34@gmail.com. Again, friend us on iTunes and Facebook. This is Andel and Denise Banks, our coordinator, saying, keep reaching for the stars.
It's Monday morning, getting back. My grind, what a weekend, funny how time can